My text this morning is found in Matthew's Gospel and chapter 27. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27 and verse 22, where we read these words of Pilate. What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? This is a question that each and every one of you here must answer. It's a question which each and every person in the world must answer. What will you do with Jesus, which is called Christ? Pilate, as we will see, tried to avoid that question. But it's an unavoidable question. It's one that cannot be got away from. What will you do with Jesus? The events leading up to this question were this. It was Passover in Jerusalem, and at about 9 o'clock at night, Jesus sits down with the disciples to eat Passover. Around that meal, Jesus whispers in Judas's ear, I know what you have planned. Go now and do it. A few days previously, Judas had met with the chief priests and elders of Israel, and they had consented together to kill Jesus, but they had decided not to do it at Passover because there were many people in Jerusalem. They thought, we will kill Jesus at a quieter time. But Jesus had to be crucified at Passover for our Passover lamb. And so Jesus forces the timing by telling Judas, I know what is planned. And Judas gets up and he leaves that meal and he goes running to the Pharisees. At about 10 o'clock at night, Jesus and the rest of the disciples get up and they make their way to a favourite place, the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus asked the disciples to be with him, to stay awake, to pray with him. But they're tired. They've been up since early that morning. And they're weary. And they've just eaten a big meal. And it's dark. And they begin to fall asleep. And Jesus wakes them up, says, please stay with me. A great anguish has come over him. The dread of something he'd never experienced before. His own father turning his face away from his beloved son. And Jesus sweats, as it were, great drops of blood. And then at midnight, Judas arrives with 1,000 soldiers, the chief priests and the elders. Jesus is betrayed. He's taken, arrested. The disciples run away. At about 1 o'clock in the morning, Jesus comes to Ananias, the chief priest's house. And there's a kangaroo court set up where they try and find Jesus guilty. They try and get people to testify. They have lots of willing volunteers to give false statements about Jesus. But they need two witnesses. And there doesn't seem to be two whose lies agree. It had to be two to satisfy the Mosaic law, that a man needed to be found guilty on the strength of two witnesses. And then at last, two false witnesses were found whose stories agreed. Jesus answers nothing. And then a man called Caiaphas says, "I adjure you by the living God." He enacted a very strong statement that forced Jesus to answer. And Jesus said, "Well, you have said it." And at that, this man Caiaphas rips his clothes. As high priest, he was forbidden to do so. In effect, he annulled his office as high priest. And he said, "What further need we of witnesses? He has blasphemed. He is guilty of death." All throughout this, Jesus has been beaten, spat at, has been palm struck in the face, blindfolded. And then at 3 o'clock, Peter, a disciple who'd followed to watch what was happening, betrayed Jesus for the third time, and the cock crowed. Daylight arrives. Jesus is then dragged off to another trial before the elders. Jewish law said that a trial could not be conducted at night. It had to be in daylight when all the facts could be seen and ascertained. And so with this perverse sense of trying to keep to their law, they reenact the same trial in daylight. And then at 6 o'clock in the morning, Jesus is brought to Pilate. Well, who was Pilate? Pilate was the Roman governor, put in charge in Jerusalem as a representative for the Roman authorities. He was in charge of raising taxes. He was in charge of keeping the peace. He was the supreme judge. He was in charge of the military. A powerful man. A man who reigned, history tells us, from AD 26 to AD 36. For a period of 10 years, the Roman governor in Jerusalem. If Pilate keeps the peace, Rome is happy. But he'd not been doing very well so far. The Jews seemed to be a troublesome people. They didn't seem happy with the Roman occupation. They were troublemakers. And Pilate hadn't handled them in the best way possible. There's a story alluded to in Luke chapter 13. Pilate, who mingled the blood of men sacrificing with the blood of the animals. And history tells us that Pilate, in order to get money to make a water supply for Jerusalem, had gone into the Jewish temple and taken gold and money to pay for it. But there'd been an uproar, and those that were there sacrificing had ended up with their own blood being shed. So Pilate was very careful and very conscious that if he was to retain his position of power, if Rome was to keep him in his job, he needed to keep the peace. And there'd been this trouble in Jerusalem. He'd kept his ears to the ground. A couple of days before, Jerusalem, packed at that time of the year, packed at Passover with people, had been hailing somebody, their king. He'd come riding on a colt. There'd been palm leaves spread before him. Pilate, no doubt, had heard many things about Jesus. It would have been his job to know what was going on. And now, 6 o'clock in the morning, his first business for the day, this great throng of people bring Jesus before him. They bring Jesus before him. And Pilate says to them, why? Why have you brought him here? You go, you judge him according to your law. We're told in John's Gospel why. Because the Jews replied, it is not lawful for us to put any man to death. The Jewish leaders wanted Jesus dead. They wanted him crucified. And so they bring Jesus to Pilate. What shall I do then with this man that is called Jesus? And we'll see briefly now how Pilate tried to evade answering that question. He didn't want to answer that question. And maybe someone is sat here this morning and you've heard that question before. You've had it asked of you before. What do you think about Jesus? And you've put it to one side. You don't want to confront that question. Well, Pilate tried to put that question off. For he suddenly heard that Jesus was from Galilee. Ah, that's not my responsibility. Herod is the governor in charge of Galilee. And so his first escape plan was to pass this question off onto somebody else. And so Jesus is taken to Herod, who conveniently happens to be in Jerusalem at that time. And Herod examines Jesus. Herod had heard much about Jesus. He'd heard these claims of miracles. He'd heard the following that Jesus had. And Herod had wanted to see Jesus for a long time. And Herod examined him. Herod had his soldiers mock Jesus, dress him up as a mock king. But Herod ultimately could find nothing wrong that Jesus had done. And so, according to the law of God as given to Moses, the matter had been established at the hand of two witnesses, at the hand of Pilate and at the hand of Herod. Jesus had been declared to be a just man, an innocent man, a man not guilty of death. And maybe someone here has been trying to put that question off of Jesus onto somebody else. Maybe you've thought, well, I've got family, and my family have thought this through, and they've rejected Jesus. Or maybe you're standing behind great intellectuals, clever scientists, men like Dawkins who would have us believe nothing about Jesus. Maybe you're trying to put the question off onto other people. Well, you can't do that. Pilate tried it and it failed. The question came back to him once again. Pilate's next strategy. He suddenly thought there's a custom that at this time of the year, in order to give the Jews a sense that they have some control over the matters in their own country, they can ask for a certain prisoner to be released. If they think that as I or the Romans have falsely imprisoned somebody, then at this one opportunity in the year, they can release one. Well, I will give them a choice that they cannot but release Jesus. And so Pilate brings to them this man called Barabbas. Barabbas means son of the father. And it's possible that Barabbas's first name was also Jesus. It was a very common name. But this Barabbas was what we would call a terrorist. He'd led a rebellion. He'd murdered people. He was a robber. He was a thief. He was a violent, wicked man. A man who the people were glad to see had been caught and had been put behind bars and was awaiting a death sentence. And so Pilate gives them this choice. Who will you that I will release? Barabbas or Jesus? A guilty man or an innocent man? And the question is put to the people. And whilst they're deciding that, Pilate's wife, she comes to him and she says, "Have nothing to do with this just man, for I have suffered many things because of him in a dream this night." But while Pilate's wife is talking to him, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, they stir the people up and persuade the people that when Pilate comes back, their vote should be that Barabbas is released. And so Pilate comes back. "Who will you that I will release, Barabbas or Jesus?" And the people cried out, "Release Barabbas." He tried to avoid the question a second time. His clever plan had failed. And so he then says, "Well, if I release Barabbas, what do I do with Jesus?" And they cried out, "Crucify him." And Pilate turns back to the people and he says, "Why? What has he done? He's done nothing worthy of death. He is innocent." And they cried out the more. And so Pilate tries his third and his final route of avoiding this issue. Pilate didn't want to see Jesus crucified. Pilate was a wicked man. Pilate was a bad man. But he cried out, "What will I do then with Jesus? I know you don't want Jesus. You don't want to see him again. I will have my soldiers beat him, scourge him, flog him to within an inch of his life. And then he'll never, ever come back to Jerusalem again. You want rid of Jesus? I can get rid of Jesus. Let me beat him, let me flog him, and then let me let him go." But they cried out the more, "If you let Jesus go, you are not Caesar's friend." That is what got Pilate. Pilate was conscious of his own job and his own position. And when the Jewish religious leaders said, "You let Jesus go, you are not Caesar's friend." They'd got no interest in Caesar. They'd got no interest in making sure that Pilate did what was right by Caesar. But they knew that Pilate was fearful for his own job. And they knew that they could cause trouble for Pilate that would get back to Rome, would cause trouble for Pilate in Rome. And so we read When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water, washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See you to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Pilate had tried three ways to avoid answering that question, but it came back to him each time. Pilate said, I'm innocent, but he wasn't innocent. He released to them Barabbas. And I'd like us just to pause and consider this man, Barabbas. We have throughout the Bible, particularly throughout the Old Testament, many stories, many types, many shadows, many pictures of what Jesus came for and what Jesus would do for us. We can think of the ark that saved Noah and his family. They were safe in that ark, born above the flood waters, and anyone that wasn't in the ark perished. And we can see how that is true of Jesus. We can think of the serpents in the wilderness biting the people, and the people died. And Moses made a golden serpent and lifted it up on a pole. We can see that that pointed to Jesus needing to be lifted up on a pole. We can think of all the complex and detailed array of Jewish festivals, sacrifices, offerings. And if we study them, we will see that in each and every one, they point to some work that Jesus would do. But it seems to me that as we get closer to the cross, we have the clearest and most obvious picture of what Jesus would do with this man, Barabbas. Barabbas was guilty. He was a murderer, a robber, a thief. He'd been rightly convicted of his crimes and rightly sentenced. And Barabbas was in prison. He knew that when he left that prison, it would be to go to a cross where he would be crucified and die. And can you think of Barabbas in his prison cell, knowing that today is the day when he will be crucified? And he can hear an uproar. He can hear a crowd chanting, Barabbas, Barabbas. He hears his name by the crowd. He thinks, this is it. They're calling for my blood. They're calling to see me to be crucified. And a man comes down the corridor, the jailer. He comes to Barabbas' cell, and the door is unlocked. And he says, Barabbas, come out. And Barabbas comes out. And then Barabbas is told, Barabbas, you are free. You are free to go. You are free to leave this prison. You are free to go out into Jerusalem and wherever you want as a free man. Your crimes, the punishment that was due to you is not coming to you. Barabbas might say, why? The jailer would say, there's someone else that has taken your place. And so Jesus and Barabbas swap places. The liberty and the freedom that rightfully belong to one that is innocent and just and righteous has been given to one who is condemned and guilty. The crimes of Barabbas are placed upon the innocent Jesus. The rights and liberties of Jesus are transferred to the guilty Barabbas. And so we can see that as we are almost at the cross, we see this clearest example yet of what it is that Jesus did for us. You and I, each one of us, before God, are like Barabbas. We're guilty. We've broken God's law. We've committed sin. And yet, we find that our place and our punishment has been taken by one, Jesus, who was a perfect man, kind, innocent, never did anybody any harm. Jesus and Barabbas swapped places. Barabbas was released. Jesus was crucified. Nothing else would satisfy God's law. Nothing else that day would satisfy the Jews. And nothing else will pay the price for sin but a crucified Jesus. In closing, Pilate had tried to avoid that question. He tried to evade answering the question, what will you do with Jesus? What will you have me do with Jesus? He didn't want to crucify Jesus. He declared Jesus innocent. But he was fearful of Rome, fearful of the Jews. He tried to wash his hands of that question. He tried to avoid answering that question. But he couldn't. What will you do with Jesus? You will answer that question now from Jesus having been crucified, from Jesus having paid the price of sin, for Jesus having died for you. What will you do with Jesus? Amen.